hosted by Maurice Oostendorp, CEO, and Annemiek van Melick, CFO of the Volksbank. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode, and after the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would now like to hand over the conference to Mr. Maurice Oostendorp. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, and welcome on behalf of Annemiek van Melick and myself in the conference call to present you the key points of the first half of 2019. As we've said in our press release, we've had a very good first half of the year. We made further progress in our mission, which, as you know, we've defined as banking with a human touch. That approach boils down to an objective focus of performance indicators for each of the four relevant stakeholders: client, society, staff, and shareholders. And for all four, we have made progress in increasing their value. We've more clients, clients that are more satisfied with how we render our services to them. We've increased our contribution to climate neutrality. We've introduced a new performance indicator to represent the value that we try to increase in terms of staff. And we've been able to produce a healthy return, slightly above our target, for our shareholders. So from all those perspectives, we've been successful in further implementing our mission, Banking with a Human Touch, which is focused on as well financial returns as, let's say, social returns. Brief update on our strategy. Each time we try to just reflect from the perspective of banking with a human touch on a number of new initiatives that we've taken in response to what we see as a growing need for a bank with a strong social identity. We strive for climate neutrality, but we also need to think further, and ASN Bank has developed a calculation of its biodiversity impact, which goes further than climate neutrality, and an objective for 2030. All its investments and loans are to have a net positive impact on biodiversity. Of course, we participated in the Dutch Central Bank's sustainable finance platform, and this initiative is part of that working group. BLG Wonen, our brand focusing on servicing through intermediaries clients to finance their own houses, introduced during a national housing debate a so-called rent statement. In the Dutch market, one of the characteristics is that people can pay relatively high rental services and at the same time don't apply to according to the criteria for a mortgage loan. And in certain situations, we think that such a rent statement should prove that people are able to still get offered a mortgage loan. And we will launch a pilot project in September by providing mortgages to so-called high rent tenants based on such a rent statement. Regiobank, active in villages and small towns, launched a platform in cooperation with a Dutch fund to support social initiatives that contribute to local cohesion. SNS is setting up its organization in such a way that its customers may contact fixed teams of employees in the more than 200 SNS shops, regardless of the topic and the means of communication selected, be it telephone, chat, face-to-face contact before the end of the year, in order to be able to offer services as closely as possible to where our clients want to be served. And finally, from a Volksbank perspective, we introduced the experiment with platform. We created meegeven.nl, a platform containing a digital safe especially for surviving relatives who are charged with the task of setting the financial affairs of a deceased person. These initiatives all take place against the background of a set of long-term objectives on client satisfaction, contribution to financial sustainability and climate neutrality, employee satisfaction and return on equity. As far as our contribution to a sustainable society is concerned, we've made good progress in the first half of the year to improve our climate neutral balance sheet. It improved by 4 percentage points. It's an increase in CO2 profit driven by financing renewable energy projects, a decrease in CO2 loss mainly due to a lower CO2 loss from bonds of local authorities. We aim for a 45% climate neutral balance sheet by 2020. So we're good on track to reach that target and then subsequently focus on getting to the 100% by 2030. We also published a green bond framework that elaborates on the principles underlying green bonds. And based on this framework, we can now issue green bonds and use the proceeds to finance activities that contribute to lower CO2 emissions. A few words on our commercial developments. Yes, we're pleased with a growth in customers, but more importantly, I would say, is that those customers are satisfied with the services we render them. From that perspective, we're absolutely positive about the fact that we've been able to improve our Net Promoter Score on a customer-weighted basis for the first time ever to a +1. We've seen a constant improvement over the last 5 years, and that improvement has continued in the first half of 2019, reaching a +1 on a customer-weighted basis. ASN Bank and Regiobank remained amongst the select group of Dutch banks with a positive NPS, but again, the overall weighted score is now a +1, and we're very pleased with that. Happy clients also tell others that we service them well, hence a growth in our customer base. Driven by an increase in new current accounts, we've reached the target of 1.5 million current accounts already early this year, a target that we had set ourselves for the end of 2020. And of course, we don't stop. We continue to see a growth. Every week we welcome new clients and we're very happy with that. Our share in new current accounts is already for a number of years somewhere between 20 and 25%. In the first half it was 21%, hence a contribution to our overall market share in current accounts in the Netherlands that remains stable at around 8%. And our objective is to further grow that percentage in the coming years. Retail mortgage production. The retail market is very price sensitive. We've focused slightly more on margins in the first half of this year than on growth. Hence a slight reduction in our market share of retail mortgage production to 6.6%, exactly in line with our portfolio share. But fortunately, we've seen a growth of the portfolio because production and redemptions on a net basis, including IFRS impact, led to an overall growth from 47.3 to 48.5 billion. A growth that we try to continue also in the second half of this year. So all in all, as I said before, we've made good progress again in further implementing banking with a human touch. We see a reflection of that in the growth of our client base and a growth, even more important, on the client satisfaction of clients. And as far as the different elements of the financial services are concerned, we've seen across the board a growth. And again, we're happy with that. In terms of financial results, I now hand over to Annemiek.
Thank you, Maurice. We're also quite happy with the first half results of 2019 from a financial perspective. We saw net profit increase by 3% to 154 million, and mainly as a result of cost savings coming through, which more than compensated the decrease in income that we've seen. The ROE came at 8.6%, which is slightly higher than the first half of last year, based on a very robust capital base. If we then look into the results, we do see a still relatively modest decline in income by 2%, largely driven by 13 million less net interest income. And there we do see margin pressure occurring, as it's increasingly tough whilst nearing the 0 basis points to compensate lower income on mortgages by effectively lowering the savings rates. If we look at the NIM margin, we see a decrease from 147%, with which we reported both H1 and H2 last year, to 140 basis points in this year. If you look at the 147 basis points, the second half of last year, we did include there a decrease in the haircut we took on prepayment penalties for early renewals in the second half of last year. We already flagged then that that positive impact would be less in 2019. That positive impact of 13 million euros was in the second half of last year. If you would detract that, you would have had a margin of 143 basis points, and then you would have seen a more gradual decline to the 140 basis points that are at now, which was largely driven by the increase in the underlying asset base. So the decline is more gradual than the chart displays, but nonetheless it is definitely a decline that we're seeing. In terms of expenses, we've seen total costs decline by 23 million or 8%. If you would exclude the levies, we would have seen a decline of 6%. As said, that's largely due to impact of reorganizations finally coming through and some large projects that have been finalized. The cost reductions are mainly driven by lower staff cost and to a lesser extent by lower marketing cost. In H1 19 versus H1 18, there were some exceptional items more or less balancing out. In 2019, we saw there, like most of the other banks have reported, a positive impact of the revaluation of the contribution we made in relation to the insolvency of DSB, which was 7 million. Our cost income decreased from 56.7 in the first half last year to 54.3, as the lower cost base more than compensated the lower income. In terms of regulatory levies, we did see a decrease year on year, and that was specifically related to the contribution we make to the resolution fund, which was lower than last year. Last year, although we did not really agree with it, the SRB did not take into account the cover deposits on ASN and on Regiobank, as we just moved to one banking license. So last year, we had a temporarily higher contribution to that resolution fund than we had this year, and that we will have going forward. In terms of provisioning, we've seen a further release. Obviously, we do recognize that in general macroeconomic outlook has deteriorated, and we see a significant impact on the interest rate expectations going forward. But if you specifically look to the parameters that are most important for our provisioning results, and which in our case is largely all retail mortgages provisioning, it is the retail house, it is the house prices in the Netherlands and the unemployment. And on both those parameters, we've actually seen an improvement rather than a deterioration, which in our portfolio led to a further release of provisioning. Stage 3 coverage ratio remained flat at 8.4%. Underlying, we saw retail mortgages in arrear decreasing further to 0.9% of total gross loans. And we've seen a further improvement of the LTV of retail mortgages, both based on price increases, but also on a larger part of the portfolio becoming redeeming rather than interest only. For the second half of this year, we do not expect another release of provisioning in the order that we've seen in the first half of this year. In terms of capital, we continue to have a very high and very robust capital base. Quarter one came out at 37.1%, largely driven by lower RWA. On the leverage ratio, we saw a decrease from 5.5 to 5.3%, which was driven by an increase in the asset in the underlying asset base. 2 points worthwhile mentioning: we've also finalized our TRIM on the mortgage credit model, and that has led to to some obligations, which have led to a temporary increase of parameters due to necessary improvements in both the model and the underlying data quality, which will lead to an increase of 800 million of RWA, which equates to 3 percentage points lower quarter one. If you look at it from a Basel IV perspective, the Basel IV impact is obviously a lot larger. And similar to the guidance we gave there last year, we still expect that to be around 12 percentage points. If you then look at the core tier 1 capital ratio on the next slide, you see that if you would deduct the 12% from the 37, we would at this point in time have a pro forma fully phased Basel IV ratio of 25%. And we have updated our capital targets towards year end 2020. Given the very monoline business model that we have, and the uncertainty in specifically the interest rate environment, but also still some regulatory uncertainty, we prefer to keep the capital base very robust. And we've set our 2020 targets at 19% fully phased Basel IV quarter one and 4.75 leverage ratio target. These targets should allow us to be still very robustly capitalized even under severe stress situations. It should allow us to deal with future regulation and also with some pressure on the underlying income given the low interest rate environment. And from a leverage ratio perspective, we there also look at peers where we don't want to become a negative outlier. It's hard to define a really good peer set for us given our geographic focus on the Netherlands only and our relatively monoline business model. But if we do look at a subset of peers, which then includes obviously the larger Dutch banks, but also some other Benelux banks and also some other European banks that have a large mortgage focus, we tend to see a peer group which on average has around five and a half leverage ratio. We don't want to become a too negative outlier from that perspective, hence our leverage ratio target at 4.75. We do consider the capital that would be on a sustainable basis above those levels, subject to regulatory approval. Obviously, we would consider that as capital that could be returned to the shareholder, which will be done in a gradual phasing way up until 2020, as I said, obviously subject to regulatory approval. It may also contain some optimization of the capital base. At this point in time, the leverage ratio would clearly be more constraining than the quarter one ratio. Hence, we would not be surprised that if during that period leading up until 2020, we would consider some tier one exercise to be able to also adhere to that leverage ratio target and still return some capital to the shareholder. In terms of outlook, we do expect that the pressure on our income basis will continue in the second half of this year. We will expect to be able to largely compensate for that by lower costs on a total, on a full year basis. And net, we would expect that the 2019 net result would be more or less in line with the 2018 net results. So far for the outlook and the financial results.
Okay, thank you very much. Then we would like to open the line for questions, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. When you have a question, please press star 1. Your questions will be answered in the order that they are received. If you have a question, please press star 1. Go ahead. The first question is from Mr. Cor Kluis, ABN AMRO. Your line is open. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Cor Kluis, ABN AMRO. A couple of questions. First of all, about the full year guidance on profit, based on your statement that the profit would be quite similar this year as last year, means that in second half there would only be a profit of around 114 million euros, first half 154 million. So could you explain the clear decline, because I think that's the lowest level we've seen since 2014 or something. So what's the reason? Do you see some extra cost increases or restructuring costs in the second half of the year, or on the NII side, is there an acceleration there on the negative side? So that's on the full year guidance. Second question is about the FTE reduction. You mentioned in the press release that you still have to plan the 800 to 900 FTE reduction by 2020. You've done 312. Will this be a gradual process, or is there a certain point that certain systems will be adjusted or something, and that it will be go faster in a certain year? So could you give an indication about the pace of that FTE reduction plan, where you still feel comfortable about? And other questions about the Tier 1 hybrid issues, which you highlighted during the call. What kind of size do we think about? Is it around 450 million euros? That may make it constrained a little bit similar for the Basel IV ratio, or could you give some indication about that? And my last question is about margins on mortgages. The margins have improved quite nicely in the last couple of months. Is there a plan, especially because you've quite abundant capital position, to increase your market share in mortgages or increase the production, because the ROEs on that product should be quite attractive at this moment, and you've got a focus model on mortgages, so. Are you extra interested now to increase the size of your mortgage portfolio during the spirit of good margins on mortgages? Those are my questions.
Okay, Cor, thanks for your questions. I'll start with the first one on the second half on the guidance. A couple of things. We do expect NIM pressure to at least continue. Could be even a bit more pronounced than what we've seen in the first half of the year. We do expect, like we've seen in the last 2 years, that cost level is always a bit higher in the second half of the year versus the first half of the year for us. It has to do with timing of, in general, of marketing campaigns and some of the projects that we're about to finalize. But the largest swing factor will probably be in the provisioning levels, where we've seen the release now, and we do not expect a release to occur in the second half of this year. I think if you would add that up, then you would see that that would be kind of a combined set of reasons why we would expect the second half of this year to be relatively in line with the second half of last year, whereby the conversion of the provisioning is an important one as well. Your second question was related to the FTE and the pace there. I think what we've seen in the first half is that we finally managed to reduce the external FTEs a bit. When we originally set the 800 to 900 target, we always said that it would be 50% internal, 50% external people. Over the last couple of years, we've had to employ quite a large group of external people, specifically related to know your customer AML type of projects and other regulatory projects. We do see the pressure coming off a little bit there, but it's hard to predict that going forward. Now, I don't think that by the end of 2020 we will have reached the 800 to 900. So it will be more of a gradual approach than that we're expecting to really compensate for that in the remaining 1.5 years that's still left until 2020. In terms of the hybrid issuance that we've hinted at a little bit, we've set the targets now towards the end of 2020. It's a bit too early yet to indicate any size on hybrid issuance there. It could go up to the level that you indicated, could also be slightly less. I think if we were to give any guidance towards year end 2020 and then a potential total capital return, that would be around the 500 million-ish level. But that will all happen gradually and phased and in close coordination with both our shareholder and obviously with the regulator. Recognizing that we're in a slightly different position than most of the other banks, given the very robust capital position that we're coming off, but also on the other side, the monoline business model and the low interest rate environment, which will have an impact on that. Your question related to margins on mortgages. Yes, on new production, we've seen a slight improve of margins over swap there. But if you look at it on a total portfolio basis, we do actually see that on a total portfolio, the margins have become slightly less, given that the variable mortgages, but also some of the special products that have been sold in the past, like kept or mortgage ceiling products, etc., are kind of running off. So on a total portfolio, you do see a decreasing mortgage. On new production, you see it's slightly improving. But the production you do now is still less than the margins that we have in our back book. If you were to spend some capital to also increase pricing and get a better competitive position on mortgages, you do come across the fact that competition is and that client demand is specifically on the longer duration end of the sites, i.e. 15, 20 year, 30 year mortgages. Where we still see severe competition from insurance and pension funds. So at this point in time, we still go for margin over volume, and we don't expect to have a massive increase in new production or mortgages going forward.
It's very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mr. Bernard Bertrand, Kepler. Your line is open. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. So the first one was on the strategy. Clearly, you are growing the number of clients, the number of current accounts. I think you have pretty high market share on new current accounts. But if I look at your market share on the product side, so, you know, savings and mortgages, it is flat to slightly down. So could you explain what is the kind of strategy to be a bit more aggressive on new accounts, new clients, and you know, do you feel you can increase and improve the cross sell over time? Because so far it's not something we have really seen also in fees and commissions. So that will be the first one. Second one was on the you know, the impact of low interest rate environment. I think one of your peers has been guided for an impact on NII from the low rate in the coming years. You know, is that, do you have a figure for us? Could you guide a bit more on net interest income, you know, beyond 2019 and H2? So that's the second question. The third question is on the mortgage production. So yes, indeed, very good margins. Could you tell us what is roughly your market share in the segment above the 10 years, so 15, 20 years? Are you actually producing on that segment, or do you leave that to other banks or maybe insurance? And then on the last question will be on the capital. Given what you said, you know, leverage, you're well above leverage target, also above CET1 ratio target. Is the Volksbank bank which could think about a pretty high payout ratio, you know, beyond the one-off and the special dividend? You know, do you have in mind something like 90% payout ratio, or you are actually at a lower level? I will assume you would be able to pay a relatively high payout, but I just wanted you to confirm that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The strategy is indeed to grow the number of clients. We believe that that growth of clients forms the cornerstone also of future value creation. We do think that in retail banking, the traditional way of selling products will gradually transform to rendering an overall financial services package where we focus on advice, where we focus on increasing financial resilience, and where we have a dialogue to reduce concerns that clients might have on the longer term as far as their financials are concerned. That will be a gradual process. That gradual process is also has also as an objective to grow our fee income. We've seen a growth in fee income from 21 million in the first half of last year to 25 million this year, which is quite a substantial increase. Of course, it's still a relatively small percentage of our total income, but the increase in itself is substantial, and we do expect that increase to continue in the coming half year, but also in the years to come. So we focus on further growth of fee income against the background of transforming selling individual products to rendering a package of financial services. That is largely how we look at it. I think I hand over to Annemiek then for the other questions.
Thanks, Maurice. You had one question on the segment of mortgages and where we participate. We don't have the market shares. We don't disclose the market shares in various segments of the markets and various duration segments. And to be honest, I don't know them by heart either, but we do participate obviously in the 15, 20, 30-year segment. We do participate there because some of our clients actually would like to renew their product. For instance, they had a 5 or 10 year mortgage and they now want to renew that. We would like to keep that client on board, and then that client may favor a 20-year product. So we do participate there. However, we don't go all the way there, and we do at some point limit the total production we do in those fixed rate periods, because you can obviously hedge the interest rate risk there, but it's very difficult to hedge the spread risk for us on such a long tenures. From a new production perspective, being completely new clients, we do also participate in that segment. But it's fair to say that specifically our BLG franchise is more focused around the 10-year segment, whereas the Regio Bank and to a lesser extent SNS has a slightly higher offer on the 20 on the 15-year plus segment. So it depends a little bit per brand, whereby the bulk of our new production focus is centered around the 10-year mortgages if it's really related to new clients, and for existing clients we go a bit further and also offering targeting the longer fixed rate periods. And obviously we there encounter more competition from the insurance companies and from the pension funds. In terms of the payout ratio and excess capital, for this point in time, up until 2020, we are sticking to the 40% to 60% payout ratio, where we expect to obviously be at the higher end of that ratio given the current capital position. And any additional capital that we would return would be done by means of an extraordinary dividend rather than in a increase of the payout ratio to 90% or something. And then you had one other question which was related to second half, but can you repeat that again?
No, yeah, just on NII, just just wondering if you could provide us a bit of guidance of the impact of low rates on the replication portfolio. One of your peers provided some guidance, some drive from low rates in the coming 18 months. Just wondering, at the current curve, what would you expect on NII also, you know, beyond 2019? What type of drive you expect from the low rates?
I have seen the explicit guidance that one of our peers has given on that. I think for us, we would stick to the guidance that we've given for full year, where we will definitely see some more pressure on net interest income. And it's a bit too early to say what the guidance would be for 2020 and beyond, and what mitigating measures we could still be taking there.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or remark, please press star 1 on your telephone. The next question is from Mr. Albert Ploeg, ING Bank. Your line is open. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Good morning, all. Thanks for taking my questions. I have a couple as well. First of all, you mentioned already that part of your capital targets and the level thereof is also related to the fact that you're basically quite a monoline focus. But is, let's say, are there any opportunities, let's say, from an M&A point of view, maybe to diversify, and how should I tie that in with, let's say, the potential of capital return? So what is basically higher on your agenda, and is there anything you can do to diversify your income mix going forward? The second question is, a little bit also follow up from the other questions, but maybe from a bit different angle. I saw that you kept intact your 2020 cost-income ratio ambition of 50 to 52%. Because in a way I would say the revenue outlook probably has become harsher. So why did you not change that target? Is that basically more confidence on the cost side, or so anything you can say that would be helpful? And then maybe on KYC and ALM. I mean, you did not make many explicit comments on that, but I did see in a press release that you are reviewing the compliance function to potentially further strengthen this. What does this exactly mean, and do you need to, let's say, do work on your retail portfolio, in your retail clients as well, to do some kind of review, as some of the other banks have flagged? And the final question is on Basel IV, on the RWA inflation of 48%. I know this is still based on several assumptions, but is it fair to assume that in terms of mitigating actions to reduce, let's say, the inflation impact, there is not a whole lot you can do with the current balance sheet, and that it is more about focus on pricing in the Basel IV world, or can you do still some mitigation on the RWA inflation? Thank you.
Okay, Albert, thank you for your questions. As far as capital targets, M&A, diversification, I think it's pretty straightforward. Those capital targets are in line with our current monoline business model, where we want to strive for above average capital ratios in order to be a well-capitalized, safe bank, and in order to cope with the impact of stress tests, which are, again, above average because of our monoline business model. So that's, for us, a combination of arguments that we can live with and lead to a situation which is also in line with our strategy. We want to be above market in terms of capital ratios. There's no link, as far as we are concerned, to M&A. Diversification in itself is, of course, on the agenda when it gets to the weaknesses of the vulnerability of your business model. At the same time, it's not easy to fully, let's say, diversify yourself out of a existing business model that functions in itself well. So we will only do that gradually, but we don't have any concrete plans at the moment. Of course, we are looking at opportunities on the non-retail side, the small businesses side, where we could carefully, gradually consider a growth. But I think from the for the time being, the diversification will more come from different income categories than from changes in the business model itself. Your question about the cost-income ratio, why didn't you change it? Despite the fact that we've indicated that it will be difficult to reach 52% by the end of 2020. It's a target for 2020. We just want to be transparent in how we look at the possibilities of achieving those targets. By the end of 2020, we will reconsider our whole set of targets. The current set of targets relates to a four-year strategic program that we started in 2017. The end of that will be in 2020. And we will only consider changes in the targets by then. The fact that we changed the capital ratio target today from 15 to 19 as far as Core Tier 1 and 425-475 leverage ratio has everything to do with the fact that we wanted to make absolutely clear what our basis is against which we benchmark opportunities to structurally consider excess equity distribution.
And to add to that, we've also disclosed in the press release, and we've already said it last year, that we actually do not expect to meet that 50 to 52% cost income target by 2020. So that has remained unchanged. And then once there will be a complete new set of targets that will go beyond 2020, we'll obviously take that into consideration.
As far as your question related to the compliance function, like many other banks, we've had an on-site inspection on the compliance function. That inspection report has led to a number of recommendations and obligations. And I think the main item was that we will have to change the compliance function in such a way that it will be covered everything related to compliance from a more integral point of view. So not just, let's say, client behavior, rules and regulations coming from that perspective, but also the regulation related to capital and a more integral approach of the compliance function is what we will strive for. So in itself, it doesn't have anything to do with KYC or transaction monitoring. It's more related to the integrality of the compliance function. Last question I hand over to Annemiek.
I think your last question was related to the implementation of Basel IV, and if there are other things that you could do to kind of mitigate the impact. Or if it would have an impact on pricing. I think it's you could focus a little bit more on NHG, but quite frankly, in general, we expect that the implementation of Basel IV, it will be hard to fully pass through the impact to clients via pricing, specifically given that there is not really a level playing field with the insurance companies and the pension funds if it comes to the impact of Basel IV. And they will not see that risk-weighted increase in their models, obviously. And they're still a harsh competitor on some of the tenures. So yes, there will be some implications on pricing of Basel IV, but we don't expect to be able to fully price through the entire impact of Basel IV.
Yeah, maybe one small follow-up on these NAG mortgages, which is obviously very important for you, because I mean in the documentations of Basel, or at least what I've seen, it's a bit difficult to distillate whether or not this can be carved out, so to speak. So what is the confidence you have in that it will actually be implemented on the NAG mortgages?
Well, at this point we're still relatively confident on it, and also in the quantitative impact studies that we participate in, that's the way we treat it, and that's also the way that it has been that the central bank has suggested us to treat it. But obviously the proof will be in the pudding, and we haven't seen the final implementation text in the CRR yet, and we haven't we don't have 100% certainty that that will occur like that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or remark, you can still press star one. There's another question. It's from Mr. Benoit Petrarch, Kepler. Your line is open. Please go ahead, sir.
Just a final one on the privatization process. You know, do you have an update you'd like to share with us, or anything special there? Thank you.
No, there is nothing to be said other than a process remark, also mentioned in the press release. We do expect NLFI, our shareholder who holds the shares on behalf of the Dutch government, to issue a progress report in either the end of the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth quarter. It's an advice to the Minister of Finance, who will subsequently formulate his position to Parliament, and that is all expected in the coming months. So we can only give you information on the timelines and the process, but not on the content.
Thank you.
Mr. Oostendorp, there are no further questions. Please continue.
Okay, then I would like to thank you all for calling in and closing off this investor presentation call, but not by thanking Annemiek, who, as you all know, will leave the Volksbank as per the 1st of September. And I would like to thank her for her contribution in especially these investor presentations and the contacts she has had with you over quite a number of years. And we wish you a lot of success in the follow-up of your career, Annemiek.
Thanks, Maurice.
Thank you all for calling in, and see you next time. Bye-bye.